Hello, my name is Brent Dundor. I identify as cisgendered and I use he, him, his pronouns. I'm a commercial photographer in Minneapolis, Minnesota, a fine artist and activist, and I'm also the proud producer of theythemproject.org. They Them Project interviews non-binary individuals, offering a platform for them to be seen and heard while informing and educating everyone on how words and actions affect the trans plus community. Hi, my name is Brent Dundor. I'm the creator, photographer, and producer of the They Them Project. I identify as cisgendered and I use he, him, his pronouns.
Hi, I'm Jacob Tobia, and I identify as gender queer, gender fabulous, gender destroyer, and I use they, them pronouns.
Jacob, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your pronouns with me. For anyone listening who doesn't know Jacob Tobia, let me tell you a little bit about them so you can be as excited for this interview as I am. Jacob is a writer, producer, and author of the forthcoming memoir, Sissy. As a performer, visionary, and internet personality, they help others embrace the full complexity of gender and own their own truth, even when that truth is messy. Jacob served as the director's assistant and social media producer on season 4 of Amazon's Emmy award-winning series Transparent, and is now the new face of Fluid Beauty, a trans and queer inclusive makeup line. In 2015, Jacob was profiled by MTV in the one-hour episode of True Life, I'm Gender Queer. And in 2016, Jacob created and co-produced and hosted Queer 2.0, a first-of-its-kind LGBTQ series on NBC News. Jacob recently collaborated with Instagram and GLAAD to produce hashtag Kind Comments, a custom campaign for Trans Day of Visibility that was viewed over 14 million times. A member of both Forbes 30 Under 30 and Out 100, Jacob, I'm so happy that our schedules finally aligned.
Yeah, we've been trying to get together for like a straight up year.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, I'm going to be in LA. And I was like, oh shit, I'm going to be in New York. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be in LA. And I was like, oh crap, I'm home in North Carolina. And it's like, oh, I'm going to be in LA. It's like, I'm on another writing retreat.
Pretty much exactly this.
Right, like literally, it was like 3 times a disaster. But we finally worked it out.
And I was like, did I just contact you 2 weeks ago maybe for this?
Or, yes.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, our schedules persisted.
I can do it.
We did it. Proud of us.
So thus far, They Them Project has mostly taken place in Minnesota, where I live and run my photo studio, with the exception of a couple other interviews that actually did take place where we are today, here in Los Angeles. You said that you lived in North Carolina. That's where you're from, North?
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
Okay.
That's where I'm like from, you know?
Uh-huh. And New York City. Mm-hmm. But now you're living here in LA.
Yeah.
What do you think of this crazy city compared to all the others you've lived in?
I mean, I love LA, honestly, because I feel like the California chill is what makes the hustle of the entertainment industry manageable. You know what I mean? Like, there's an abundance of weed, there's an abundance of sunshine, there's an abundance of beaches. And I just feel like in New York, whenever I had like a free afternoon, I would be like, oh shit, what did I do wrong? Like, oh man, I'm messing up my scheduling. Oh crap, I need to be doing something. And in LA, when I have a free afternoon, I'm like,
you can go somewhere.
Yeah. I'm going to go sit on a beach, and like, I don't really go to the beach that often because traffic, but like hypothetically, I'm going to like metaphorically sit on a beach and like think about what I want to do next, you know? Yeah. I feel like the California chill has been so good for me. Because I think I tend to, especially, you know, I've been employed like full time, you know, and sort of hustling and doing all this media stuff on the side for a really long time, and was working at some incredible places, right? I was working at like a feminist lesbian foundation that was incredible. And, you know, it's not like I didn't like my day jobs, but it was really tough to.
That was in New York.
Yeah. But the psychology of like, how do I get a career going and actually make the leap into fully being my own person and like, and my own producer and like my own, you know, like freelance self. That was really hard for me to make. And the times in New York when I tried to do it, I just feel like the energy of New York can really crush you when you're starting out, you know, when you need to be really patient and you just have to sit around and wait for fancy people to make decisions that you're good, you know? Because that's the whole game. That's so much of the game of LA. It's just about like, can you be patient enough to wait for that person that you met 6 months ago to think about you in 6 more months for a really, really, really cool project? project, you know? And if you can, if you're patient enough, then it happens, you know?
Yeah, things can happen here.
Right. And it's this, and it feels like alchemy when it finally does. You're like, wait, what the fuck? I've been waiting for so long. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, you're going to go pitch at Hulu, get ready, you know? Like, and you're like, what? And everyone's like, yeah, that's happening, duh. And you're like, oh, okay, great, cool, let's go, you know?
I expected it the whole time.
Right. So it's, you know, I really like it out here in LA, although it's not that the thing I always think is important for me to say is that people have this misperception that I left North Carolina because of my queerness. And it's like, girl, I didn't leave North Carolina because I needed a place that was better to be queer. Like the Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina is like, I mean, like Durham could not be a better place to be, like, to live and breathe as a queer person. Like,
I never would have guessed.
It's incredible.
I've never been, so.
Yeah, like, it's got this burgeoning activist community. It's, like, a badass, like, POC, like, hub. You know, there's, like organizing and queer organizing is, like, so intersectional and wonderful. You know, I really loved living in North Carolina. And I feel like people have this idea that I left because, like, it was so repressive and I needed to find the freedom of New York City and Los Angeles. And I'm just like, fuck that. Like, I moved to New York City and Los Angeles because, like, you can't sell a TV show from North Carolina.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, you can if you're really fancy and stuff. Like, if you're already established and then move there, which I hope to do maybe one day, like, go back. And then when people need me in LA, they'll have to fly me out business class.
There we go.
But yeah, like, I left just for work reasons, just for industry reasons, you know? And I think it's so important to clarify that. That's why one of the reasons why I love your project so much is that you are shooting a majority of people like in Minnesota, where everyone's like, oh, like queer people don't exist anywhere other than the coasts. And it's like we're everywhere, idiot. Like, what the hell's wrong with you?
I haven't thought of that perspective before. So yeah. I like that.
I think it's so important because so much of what we see is just like this idea that queer people must escape to somewhere before we can like find communities that affirm us and love us. Mm-hmm. And like, while there are like, you know, while I'm not trying to say that like, that there aren't queer people in small towns in the South or in the Midwest or whatever who are struggling, right? Like there are also queer people in those places that are thriving and are accepted and loved by their communities and are understood by the people around them and are appreciated and adored, you know? Mm-hmm. And we can't ever erase that narrative because I think the psychology of like, oh, I can't be happy here is so much more devastating than anything you're actually up against. Mm-hmm. The idea that you're impossible is so much worse than any structural discrimination you could ever face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea in your own head that your happiness is not a possibility. And that's why I'm just like, no, like rural queers, I'm here for you. Southern queers, I'm here for you. Like, you know, like flyover state queers, I'm here for you, right? Like you can thrive exactly where you are. You can live and love exactly where you are. It might be different. The recipe might look a little different, but like at the end of the day, it's still possible, you know?
Sometimes, when I'm talking about things that are happening in Minneapolis, where I live, I do question like, okay, if people are listening to this in other cities, are they saying, I don't care about that, but I'm sure that what they can do is relate to exactly what's happening where they are.
Right.
Like in those smaller places compared to LA and New York.
Yeah. And it's like, fuck the idea that you talking about like, you know, Minneapolis in detail isn't like allowed. I mean, I think about all of the damn artists who like, you know, who are from New York and they'll talk about, yeah, I was strolling on Sixth Avenue the other day, you know, or like, oh, I just stopped into like the Soho House or whatever. Like, you know, they mentioned such specific cultural sites. They mentioned specific streets. They mentioned specific neighborhoods and they don't think twice about it because they're like, well, I'm in the middle of the goddamn universe. So of course I get to mention with specificity my neighborhoods, you know, and fuck the idea that only people who live in major cultural, like major coastal hubs get to do that. Like that's bullshit. One of the things that I've been really watching while I've been working on my memoir project is like being sure to name some things with specificity about Raleigh and about Durham and about North Carolina, because the entire book takes place there.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I don't get to any of the time when I moved to New York or tried DC for a second or lived in Los Angeles. Like it's only because I came of gender. I came of my gender. Like I came into my gender in North Carolina, 100%.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I had like little stints in other places. Like I did a study abroad, like a study away program in New York City for like one semester, but you know, but my lived experience, like I understood who I was. I bought my first tube of lipstick. I bought my first pair of high heels. Like I ran around, you know, in a dress for the first time. All of that was in North Carolina.
Okay. So I have all sorts of questions for you. Some are the regular questions that I have for everybody else, and then some are special to you. Mm. But I want to start out with asking if you have any questions for me or about the project.
I feel like I've like creeped on it enough online and think it's and think it's cute enough that like we can just dive good. Right in.
Cool, because I have a feeling we'll talk about yes. all sorts of other Lord things knows. First. So do you have any goals by partaking in the project? I mean, I guess we're kind of talking about that now.
I mean, my hope is just that, I want to get some cute ass photos.
That's okay.
Because you're really good. I mean, like, let's be transparent about it. No, this is actually important. I mean, the reality, I mean, I one of the things that I'm really committed to in my career is like trying not to like keep my curtain closed and like pretend that like the stuff I'm facing on us, like from the industry or whatever, isn't real. Right. And also trying not to like keep any secrets about it. Cause yeah. I don't think that serves anybody. Yeah. So like one thing I will just name is that I have a crushing demand for like high quality portraits of myself yeah. at this current moment in my
yeah.
career.
Yeah.
And the reason I need them is because it like right now, like Instagram is such an important engine for people to take me seriously and to think that I'm valuable.
Yeah.
Right. Like people look at my Instagram page and like, oh wow. Yeah. That's a person who's like prestigious and interesting. And we should help them produce the creative content they want to make.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, I'm really grateful, for you offering to, you know, to create beautiful, portraits of me. And I'm happy to give my intellectual labor in exchange for yeah. your creative labor.
The honesty is that's combining the New York and LA being really honest about mm-hmm. something like that. When I used to live out here, I was used to that, but I'm laughing because I'm like, oh yeah, this is Los Angeles. You can say what you're thinking.
Right. You don't have to play games. I don't think I just, in general, I'm not good at playing games. So yeah. I get like competitive when I play games. So I try not to play games whenever I can avoid it. Sorry, at the table.
That's okay. All right. So, in the last one or two days, I've been going a little crazy getting ready to come out here. Like I said yeah. to you, I actually was on an airplane just like 4 hours ago,
you
I think.
Poor baby. I'm so proud of you.
So I've been YouTubing you, and I've been in the car. I've been listening to your videos. Laying in bed, I've been listening to your videos. On the airplane coming over here, I was listening to your videos.
Did you buy Wi-Fi just for me? I hope not.
Well, I did do the free subscription of YouTube so I could download them.
Oh, okay.
I prepared.
I was just like, I hope you didn't spend $30 for that airplane Wi-Fi on my behalf. That was stupid.
I've never done that.
Okay, good. Don't.
So I love the way that you speak about gender, your mm-hmm. language and your confidence, mm-hmm. your desire to start new conversations about mm-hmm. gender. I'm trying to do that myself through this project, the more that I learn. Mm-hmm. And I've also, through watching all those videos, I didn't know until I really dove into all of them how good of an interviewer you are and yeah. how good of an interviewer you are and how many interviews you yourself have done. Mm. So before I just jump into the usual questions, I do want to say that you can challenge me. I want you to, like, I want this to be a conversation.
Oh,
you can interview me right back.
And, yeah.
Let's go for it.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm not shy about being like, that's a dumb question. Or okay. being like, I don't like that framing.
All right. I'll try to count on my finger how many times it happens.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So here we go. Jacob, would there ever be a time you would be upset if someone asked you what pronouns you use?
No. I'm like, girl, just ask, but be chill about it. Like, don't be weird. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing I don't like about, I feel like the moment you start describing yourself as non-binary, everyone's like, oh, so you're like a fragile little porcelain vase. And I'm like, no, I'm like sturdy and hardy as fuck. Like, you can just be chill with me. You don't have to like tiptoe around shit or be like, oh, so I just have this, it's just this quick question. I don't mean to impose. I don't want it to be this big deal, but I was just for my own sake and for my own learning and curiosity as trying to be a better ally. I just was wondering what pronouns you prefer to be addressed by as a person. I'm like, girl, don't ask it like that. Just be like, hey, what are your pronouns again? I'll be like, they, them. I'll be like, okay, cool, great. And then if someone forgets, I'll be like, oh, it's they, them. And they'll be like, oh, sorry. And I'll be like, it's no big deal. I forget people's pronouns all the fucking time. Yeah. I am not perfect. It's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
I just need people to be chill about it. Like, because I just can't deal with that level of like anxiety in my life. I already have enough of it. Like, please don't be anxious about asking me a very simple, easy question.
Uh-huh. How much responsibility do you think should be put on others to ask that question or for non-binary people to tell people their pronouns?
I feel like responsibility is a strong word for like what that is. I'm like, girl, it's so easy. Just be like, oh, so what are your pronouns again? Okay, great. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, it's not like some big burden that you're carrying by being a decent human being. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like in the same way that if you forgot someone's name or aren't sure of someone's name, you just fucking ask them. Mm-hmm. So like, if you forget someone's pronouns or you don't know, just ask them. It's not like you're doing this big social justice work by doing that. You're literally just being a competent person.
Yeah. This question is the first one that I ask in every single interview.
Of course.
And it's all just to let people know that it's the easiest question to ask and like the most respectful one you can give to people who are non-binary.
Yeah. And it's like chill, but also necessary.
But when I first started the project, I mean, I was one of those people that was like, oh, should I? I mean, basically exactly what you were saying. How should I do? Is it okay? Can I do it this? And is it? Yeah. So you said you use they, them pronouns. Are there any instances where you currently use other pronouns?
Oh yeah. No, there are certain people in my life that get exceptions or get free passes. Sometimes with friends, we'll use like she and her, but it's just for fun. And then some people in my life, there's a very small group of people in my life who I let use he pronouns who like I'm fine with, you know? Because there are certain people where I'm like, we've known each other for literally forever. You've known me for like my entire life. And this, at the end of the day, like I think it is important to remember that like pronouns are just words, you know? And like words have power. I'm not saying words don't have power. I'm a fucking author. I know words have power and words can get you money. but I think it's really important to remember that like, that words are something that's layered on top of and built on intention. Mm-hmm. And intention is so much more important than the actual words.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So like, let's say I'm having dinner with like some 80-year-old cute ass, brilliant ass queer granny. And like, you know, and she's like, oh, Jacob's so great. I love him. And I'm sitting there in like my fucking like little cute tulip print dress or whatever, like in my hair all done and like with some, you know, like a cute red lip. And then, you know, someone's using he pronouns, but in the most loving, affectionate, sweet way. Like, am I going to go out of my way to correct that person in that moment? Like, no, girl, I don't care about it like that.
Yeah.
You know? And I know that may not be like the party line in terms of what we're supposed to say in the media and shit. But I think it's important to acknowledge that like, that this thing is, it's complicated. Intention is so much more important than the actual words, you know? And so like, will I maybe afterwards, like one be like, oh, hey, just by the way, like I do use they, them pronouns, but it's totally fine. Like mm-hmm. I might, mm-hmm. but am I going to be like, I need to correct you. I'm like, no, you're a sweet ass granny who's loving on me.
Yeah.
Like, you don't mean anything negative by this. And like, you're so sweet and supportive of my gender in every other way that I'm expressing it. So like, I'm not going to take your mistake and build some assumption or presumption of negative intent from something that was just like totally, was just an oversight.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So I just posted an interview with Philippe Cunningham, who is a mm-hmm. council member in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And, I asked them, so would you be upset if someone used they, them pronouns with you? And he said, he uses he, him pronouns.
Yeah.
And he said that, no, I wouldn't be upset, but I'd correct them.
Right.
So,
right. And people relate to things differently. Like we're even within the non-binary community, like we're allowed to relate to this question differently.
Yes, yes.
You know, like I'm just in general, it's just not something I have emotional energy for. To like, I don't like spending time being mad at people.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm like, I'm already mad enough at the world. I don't need any more negativity in my day to day. So I just, you know, and is that a coping mechanism or whatever? Like, should I be more angry about it? I don't know. But also I'm like, I don't care. I'm doing what's best for my mm-hmm. emotional health mm-hmm. and well-being right now, which is trying to find a way to connect with people and not let something that feels like a technicality for me, like get in the way of building authentic and beautiful relationships.
I respect and appreciate that.
Yeah. It's just how I feel.
So you did state at the beginning how you define yourself away from pronouns.
Yeah.
Can you say all that again, please?
I mean, I love like 3,000 words around gender, right? Like I feel like, you know, I don't want, you know, have you ever built a Google form? Like you can, there's like so many different question types, right? And you can choose like, okay, like this is a yes or no. You can choose like, this is a multiple choice. You can choose like, this is a check boxes where you can check as many as you want. You can choose like short form response where it's like a short little bit, like mm-hmm. for like a sentence,
mm-hmm.
or you can choose paragraph response. And I'm like, I think what is your gender should always be a paragraph response.
Yeah.
Like I don't like the idea. because to me, gender is something spiritual. It's a mythology. It's a religion, right? It's a way that we understand ourselves on a really deep human level. And so when you're asking about someone's gender, you're asking about so much more than just like this arbitrary set of words, you know? And I don't like the idea that anyone has a simple gender, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a cis man in the world who has a simple gender. There's not a cis woman in the world whose gender is simple. Gender isn't simple because people aren't simple, you know? So all that being said, I have so many different words that I love because I feel like I'm one of those like layer cakes with the really thin little layers, you know?
Those are good ones.
Yeah. They're the best. They're delicious because they have more icing per cake slice than like normal, you know? Like the more layers of cake you have, the more icing you have between the layers. And that's what everyone's trying to eat anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, I love the term genderqueer. I love the term non-binary. I am absolutely and proudly a member of the trans community. But on the same level, like I don't not think of myself as a gay man. I don't disidentify from gay manhood or using the term gay, because I feel such a connection and like a sisterhood / brotherhood with gay men. You know, I understand myself as like queer in a very general sense. I'm also a gender unicorn. I'm a gender witch. You know, some days I'm a gender messiah when I'm really preaching, you know, like I got all these layers and all these ways I want to describe it. I hope that we build into a world where everyone's like, oh yeah, like this is, you know, that like, what's your gender is like a really fun get to know you cocktail party question. Yes. Where there's not like where everyone goes around and shares for a second, mm-hmm. you know?
I've been always asking people's pronouns, but just recently in the project have I started to ask for them to give more description to themselves away from pronouns. And I'm finding why that's important.
Yeah. People appreciate that.
So tell me a bit more about your gender journey. When did you first start questioning gender?
Oh, I mean, I always questioned gender. Like as a kid, I mean, it wasn't even for me. My first understanding of what gender was that gender was just a process of shaming people into doing what they're supposed to do. Hmm. You know, like, cause when I was a child, I was just so effortless in my body and so effortless in what I wanted to do and just exploding with expression everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, like as a kid, it was like, I wanted to run around in the woods behind my house and get really like really dirty and then like fight with sticks, you know, and like and then run around in the creek and get all muddy and then like scoop some clay out of the side. Should I wait for that plane?
It's okay.
Okay, it's not picking up.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can hear it, but right. I'm okay with this.
Okay.
We're live.
As long as you're with live. I just always like
if you want to start over, you can.
Okay. Anyway, but like
let's start all over.
No. I'd like scoop some mud, you know, out of the side of the creek or some clay, and then I'd make a little clay pot, like, and then I would go fire in the oven in my house. Not like that, not even out of kiln, just like in the normal oven. You know, and then I would go pick a bunch of flowers, wildflowers, like, and then I would put them in, you know, and then I'd make a little flower arrangement for my mom, and then, you know, I'd grab my and then I'd shower, I'd like clean off because I was muddy, and then I'd like, you know, grab my Barbie and my little hair and like my little hairbrush and just like brush her hair while I watched like a documentary about like Mars, mm-hmm. you know, and then I'd be like, okay, time for bed. Like in that and none of that, there was no world in which any of that felt contradictory or like an issue. It was just what I wanted to do, you know? And so for me, like my first understanding of gender was like as this tool that just said half of what you want to do is wrong and you can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this gender thing sucks. It's so stupid. You know?
And I always try to pull out from what people are saying the idea or the perspective of someone who was just starting with an understanding of gender. Right. The idea of the fact that there was so much shame involved.
Right.
That's where people really have to look and understand what that means to like then take the step to respect
right.
people.
And it's everyone who gets shamed for their gender, right? Like every child on this planet. Well, not every child on this planet, because there are cultures.
Yeah.
There are still indigenous cultures in this world. There are still other cultures that have not been, you know, subject to white Western imperial colonization, because that's what the gender binary is. But there are cultures that still have traditions that are much more open and much more empathetic towards children on the about gender. But I think at least in like white Western culture, you know, in sort of American culture, you know, we, like, everyone is shamed for their gender at the earliest of ages, you know, like, even people who identify as, like, cis men or cis women, like, they are inundated with shame and gender policing and taught what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. Like, I feel like it's kind of like, I mean, not to be like that girl who makes, like, Harry Potter references to describe gender, but to be that girl, I feel like it's, you know, it's like everyone has horcruxes, right? Like everyone has killed people, like has had to kill a part of themselves in order to exist under the gender binary. It's just a question of how many horcruxes we have. It's not a question of if. There is no person on this planet who has been subjected to the gender binary. Granted, not everyone has, and thank God. But for everyone who's been subjected to the gender binary, we all have baggage from it, you know?
And today with, I mean, everything that you've done with all of this, you have it all figured out now, right?
Oh, you're totally. I got it all figured out. Yeah, yeah. I got it solved.
Okay.
Oh my God, I'm never. I'm literally going to be like, I feel like people are like, I've gotten really good at, I'm at the point now where I don't come out anymore. I just tell people everything's TBD. So just, you know, if I come back tomorrow and I'm like, okay, I'm getting top surgery and taking estrogen and going to get bottom surgery later and I'm saving up and, you know, that's what's happening. Like, you should not be surprised. Mm-hmm. Also, if I come back and I'm like, I'm a boy again, then like, you should also not be surprised. Like, I'm allowed, like the whole point is that I've been like, I'm allowed free reign in range in terms of doing whatever I want with my body and whatever I want with my expression. And nothing should be surprising to anybody in my life anymore.
So how long have you been using they, them pronouns?
I started using they, them pronouns in college, but only at like queer conferences and queer events and stuff. I didn't like bring them into my life and kind of professionally and fully until probably right around like senior year of college, my first year out of college, when I was sort of like, no, this is a thing that's like happening all the time and everyone needs to be good about it most of the time.
So now I just have some questions about names.
Yeah.
Have you always gone by Jacob?
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes I was Jake when I was really young. And then I had a few nicknames, but yeah, Jacob is like, has always been it's my birth name. It's my assigned name. And I love it actually.
Have you ever considered another name?
I thought about maybe like taking on a stage name, cause I feel like those are cool. And I feel like I could like name myself something really cool. Like, I think like Awkwafina, who's like in Ocean's 8 that's about to come out. I think I'm like, yeah, maybe I should get a cool name like Awkwafina. I don't know for a fact whether or not that's a chosen or assigned name, but I think it's a chosen name.
Okay.
You know, like I think people who have chosen names are cool. Like, what's my Lady Gaga?
Exactly.
You know, so there's still a part of my brain that's like, maybe I need to like have like Jacob, but then also have like a separate creative persona who like navigates the world in a slightly different way.
Before I started the project, I had no idea what names represented to trans and non-binary people. Right. So I actually had met someone, one of the first people that was part of this project, I had met them previously and I had known them by a different name.
Yeah.
And then they came in and I asked them to state their name and they said a different name. And I'm like, what's going on?
What's my name?
Yeah. I didn't get it at all. So I always try to emphasize what name represents to people. So what does your name represent to you?
Well, for me, keeping my birth name is about, you know, I think that there are some, like, there are some trans people where the most, I think the best way for them to understand themselves is as reborn, you know, like there's really, like, there are a lot of trans people who feel like when I transitioned, I got a second chance at life and got to have this kind of like, you know, this rebirth where I became a new person, where I was able to claim who I always wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, And I love that narrative. I think that narrative is so incredible. But for me, what I like is sort of the idea of like, of keeping this, you know, keeping this body and keeping this, you know, this name is a way of sort of being like, it's all connected. Like I am still that who I was when I was 4.
There's history to it.
Right. There's a history to it that I love to keep. And I think there's something powerful about when people see Jacob in print and then see someone who it doesn't look like what they think a Jacob should always look like. I think there's something powerful about and transformative about that dissonance.
Many have told you that they admire your confidence. I wanted to say that I appreciate that as well. But I did hear you say in several interviews that basically you have to fake it just like everyone else at times. And the hardest thing for you to do is just to walk out the door.
Mm-hmm.
So is that any different here in LA as opposed to New York or North Carolina?
Oh my God. LA is so much better.
Really?
Because it's car centric, right? Like in New York, the thing about New York is that even if statistically New Yorkers are the most affirming people on the planet, it doesn't matter, right? Because let's say like in Los Angeles, we can, even if we're going to be like crazy about it and be like 4% of people in Los Angeles are total fucking transphobic bigots who will say something walking past a trans person on the street. Right. And then let's say in New York that that's like, you know, there's like, it's like half of 1% or whatever.
Okay.
Right. In LA, I won't see that 4% in my day to day most of the time because I leave my house, I get in my car, I drive to the place I am, I park, and then I go to my meeting, you know, like, or I park and then I go to my thing, you know, like I can be, like, I don't interact with nearly as many people numerically per day as in New York. Whereas in New York, it's like just to go to a meeting, like a professional meeting where I need to like meet with someone and be really professional and put together. Right. And I have to be high femme presenting and I need to like, I want to be high femme presenting. But like, you know, I have to look like, I want to look like my best self. I have to like get on the subway. I have to walk from my apartment to the subway. Right. And there's easily 100-200 people that you encounter in that moment. Get on the subway and wait for people, another 500 people. Right. And then walk up 15th Street or whatever for 3 blocks and then be like, okay, great. By that time I've seen 1,000 people or 1,500 people.
Yeah,
right. So like if only 1% of people or if half of 1% of people out of the 1,500 that I've seen are assholes, that means that I just interacted with like, you know, I don't know, like with the math. Oh fuck. I have to do math really fast now.
The average walk is going to have something.
It'll have something, you know what I mean? And in LA, I just don't feel that. And the other thing that I'm getting better at doing is being like, if I lived in an ideal world, right? Like it would be fabulous to live in, like in some super affirming world where like trans people were never heckled on the street and gender nonconforming people were never given shit. But I don't live in that world, right? And one of the things that I do for my own protection and for my own mental health is that I'm like, I don't owe my gender to anyone at any time, right? Like, I mean, like it is okay. I feel okay being like, you know, the cost of not expressing my gender is always in balance with the cost of the way the world treats me when I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that like my desire to be my full self at all times and wear whatever the fuck I want is balanced against my desire to feel safe in the world.
Okay.
And it sucks that those things are balanced against each other, but the reality is that they are right now. And so I've gotten better at calculating what that balance means for me. Right. So like I feel like I save my femme energy for moments when I know I'll be safer. You know, like when I just when I'm just like walking up to the Starbucks, to like go, you know, sit on my laptop for a few hours and get some work done. I'm like, I might wear like a cute lip and maybe some earrings or something, but I won't like do that in a summer dress because I'm just like, I don't want to deal with that right now. I just want to send some fucking emails and that's enough stress.
And that's kind of, we went in and out of my next question because you've talked about, the idea that you maybe have people have expectations of you if you're going to go to an interview.
Right.
And then this idea of just walking down the street. Do you ever feel that, as a leader in the community that you do have to like up it just because that's what you're trying to express and advocate?
I'm learning to be like, I'm allowed to not be high femme. I don't owe it to anybody in my entire life to be high femme at any given time in order to keep quote unquote my right to be a feminine person. Because I think that expectation is so damaging. The idea that your gender must be consistent in order for you to have the right to express it. It's like, that's not practical given the world we're in. And also, fuck you. I don't owe it to you. I don't owe it to you to put on lipstick in order to have the right to wear lipstick on any day I please.
Right.
You know, I don't owe it to you to wear eyeliner. I don't suddenly lose the right to wear eyeliner or to wear dresses or whatever because I didn't wear eyeliner or a dress for one day.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm a human person and I don't have to be some symbol for anybody.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like no one should think of themselves as a symbol. It's such a fucked up psychology and it really messes you up.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So on national television, there was a very real moment with your father expressing fear for you.
Right.
Asking if you could just tone it down a bit. And you've expressed how you understood that he was saying that with love and that he was worried about you.
Mm-hmm.
Does he still worry? Do you have anything more to say on that?
Oh, my parents are both still very worried, but they don't say as much. They've sort of realized that, like, I'm navigating it as best as I can. And I think that they kind of, like, they sort of mellow out about it, you know? It's not that they have any less anxiety. I mean, they're parents. They're always going to worry about me. Parents worry about their kids. It's what their parents do,
yeah.
You know? I think that they've really come to a place of, like, we don't understand exactly how you've gotten by for as long as you have in the way that you have, but we have faith at this point in your complete resiliency.
Yeah.
You know, like, they've sort of seen me string it together over and over, and they keep being like, wow, you just keep stringing it together. And half of that is, I mean, about my gender, and half of that is about my career, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, any person who has a kid who wants to do a career in television, they're just like, oh, fuck. Like, Jesus, my poor kid. You know, like, my poor kid's never going to have healthcare, you know? And they've just watched me over and over, like, figure it the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You also said in an interview that your life was perfect for 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell everyone more about that?
I was perfect for 3 seconds before the nurse was like, oh, it's a boy. And then I was like, oh, fuck. That's why I started crying. I was fine. Like, when I was born, I was like, okay, this is chill. And they're like, that's a boy. And I was like, yeah.
I always ask people if they can give an example of a time when someone challenged their gender, mm-hmm. and how it made them feel. And feel free to answer it that way. But I'm curious if, being in the industry, if there's ever been a time where that has happened that you could share.
Mm.
Maybe in a time when you would least expect it.
No. I mean, the thing that's nice about how I carry myself in the world is that I think I have only seen, in terms of, like, in-person meetings and in terms of who I'm working with, I only see the best of Hollywood, because people who are terrible people in the industry just don't even take a meeting with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, there's something beautiful. They're beautifully self-selective about being a gender nonconforming creator and performer in the city, because only people with vision and only people with creative, like, hearts, and only people who are trying to make work that matters even want to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, thank God, I don't want to deal with any of those other fuckers. Like, I don't have time for that. You know, there was one point where I had a meeting with someone who was kind of like, with a cisgender person who kind of, like, challenged my strategy creatively and challenged sort of what I was trying to do creatively, and sort of was like, well, isn't the stuff you're trying to create, like, a little too niche? Like, shouldn't our goal be to, like, reach out across the aisle to everybody, like, in Trump's America, you know? And I was like, and that was one moment where I was like, all right, you need to step back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't say that. I was polite in the meeting, but I was just, it was like this moment where I was like, you know, and part of why they said that. And I think one day I'll have a conversation with this person. I'd love to sort of, like, to really debrief it. But, and I don't dislike this person. Let me also just name
it. Okay.
That.
Okay.
I think we can still work together on some stuff, but it was informed by the fact that they had someone in their life who was trans and who, like, had experienced a lot of adversity. Right. And it was one of those things where, like, they thought, oh, because I understand this on a heart level emotionally, because I understand emotionally how difficult it is to navigate the world as trans, that means I know how to fix the problem of transphobia. And you know, the hard thing for me is, it's like, understanding emotionally how trans people feel doesn't mean that you're qualified or at all credentialed to address the problem, right? That's like saying, oh, I have a relative who's passed away from cancer, so I'm an oncologist.
Yeah.
It's like, just because you understand how awful it is to have someone in your life be affected by this does not mean that you are actually a skilled practitioner in treating the disease of transphobia.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, and I have a dual doctorate in that shit.
Yeah.
And so I had this moment where I was like, I really need you to step back and not tell me that the way I'm trying to present myself in the world isn't effective enough or isn't doing the right thing, because I've been honing my strategy for a fucking decade. How long have you been honing yours?
Yeah, you're, you know, being what I, you. Mean?
Right. Like, and I've also been thinking really strategically about exactly how to break into the industry, exactly how to do the storytelling that I want to do, exactly who I'll reach and why and how that will be important, exactly what tone is the sweet spot to be heard by queer and trans people and to have make work that's meaningful to queer and trans people that can also be heard by everyone else. I mean, I'm a masterful artist at this point. Like, I can make work and write articles that can be understood by a 60-year-old cisgender white woman or a 75-year-old cisgender white guy, right? And also be valued and understood and meaningful to queer and trans women of color, mm-hmm. you know? Like, and it's not that I do that perfectly every time, but like understanding how to write in such a way that you speak to that wide of an audience, like, that's my skill. That's like one of my biggest professional skills. It is one of the things I'm best at. And it is something that has taken a lot of really conscientious work and practice as an artist to achieve.
Well, anybody that might want to work with you but have an opinion about how you should go on with your path, if they listen to that, they probably won't have to question you in front of you. Right. And you probably would have just got the job right there. Right.
Right. Totally.
Can you give, I'm sure there's a lot of examples, maybe there's one extravagant one where someone did validate your gender.
Even just yesterday I had this incredible meeting where I was meeting with, some creative executives and two of them were gay guys and one was a cisgender woman, and we had and I feel like throughout the course of the meeting we just related to we found all these beautiful ways to relate to each other. And there was a moment where the cisgender woman in the meeting was like, well, I can't really understand your experience, and we're like, or I don't share your experience, but I'm really excited to like work with you on something. Uh-huh. And I was like, no, like, you can totally understand my experience. Like, we both navigate the world as feminine people, and feminine people are treated like garbage. Like, high femmes are really treated like shit. You know, the ways in which you're treated like shit are very similar to the ways that I'm treated like shit. You know, like, we don't have this big disconnect here. And she was like, oh my God, you're right. And I was like, yeah, like, we're in this together in this deep way. And that felt really powerful and affirming for me. We're distracted.
You're welcome.
There's an adorable puppy that just walked in.
Yeah.
and so cute.
Mako.
Hey. Hi, Mako.
She's happier now that she got to run.
Yeah. Hi, little baby.
Well, I want to give you space to talk about anything else you have going on. There's the book and...
Yeah, the book is my main one. Oh my gosh, Mako's drinking water. This is an experiential performance piece now where you're going to be witness to distractions in the world around us. It's a metaphor about gender. Right. That's what it always is. Everything's a metaphor about gender. Take this plant in the corner. That is a metaphor about gender. Mako, the puppy in the room, is also a metaphor about gender. Anyway. But yeah, so, I mean, I'm the book is the most exciting thing for me right now in the world. I'm so excited for the world to be able to read it. I still have to wait a really long time because we have all this PR stuff we have to do. There's all this publicity stuff that you have to tee up. So the manuscript is about to be finished. But once that's wrapped and we have the galleys printed, it's still like 9 months before it gets to come out to the world. So it'll be in March of 2019. And I mean, it's not 100%. It'll be spring sometime, but I'm really, really excited for the world to see it. And to read it, and for us to be able to share it. So,
anything else you want to talk about that you have going on?
I mean, other than that, I'm just hustling the little face off and auditioning for a bunch of shit. But I can't say anything about anything that I'm hustling on right now.
Well, and
I'm so Hollywood that way now, where I'm like,
Oh,
I booked this really exciting project 3 weeks ago, and I have to go up to Burbank to do something for it. But I can't say anything about it for fucking a year and a half. Like, literally, I can't say anything about one project for a year and a half. It's so stupid and wonderful. I feel very blessed to finally be one of those people who's like, oh, I'm doing something so exciting that I can't say anything about it. I've worked really hard to be that person.
What can trans allies do to help trans people? And I'm going to re-say this, actually. How can people make the world a better place for trans and non-binary people away from just respecting their pronouns?
I mean, the biggest thing you can do is understand that we're not that far away from you, and I mean that in a spiritual level, right? That even cisgender people know what having your gender policed feels like, you know? And not thinking about oh, I'm over here and trans people are over there, but thinking, wow, trans people are on the same continuum as I am, and we all have gender trauma, and I need to heal from my gender trauma. And the reason that the trans community is so beautiful is because it is a community of people who are doing that publicly for the world to see. you know, and I'm so grateful for the trans people because of that, because they're helping me find healing too. And so that's why I'm supporting the trans community, is not because I'm like some, you know, some really good person who's just like, you know, supporting some of these other people who are totally different from me, but because I understand as a cis person the ways in which trans people and the empowerment of trans people fundamentally empowers me, you know?
Do you feel that race plays into gender identity and acceptance of someone's gender?
Oh my God, totally, of course. And I mean, I think, you know, the biggest thing about race is that the gender binary is a white thing. Like, it was started in white Western culture and then exported via colonization across the world, right? Like, cultures around the world had totally different understandings of gender than we did, and totally different modes of cultural dress that may have had gender embedded in them, but certainly not in the way that we understand it, right? The idea of a flowy garment being necessarily feminine is such a white Western thing, you know? So whiteness and the gender binary, like, are the same, like, it's all one force that we're trying to fight, mm-hmm. you know? Fighting against the gender binary is also fighting against white supremacy and against a world that uses only a white Western lens of gender. And then, you know, on a more granular level, like, of course, how you experience the world ethnically and racially, you know, it informs how you experience your gender. Like, that's just how people work.
What advice do you have for youth who might be questioning their gender?
I mean, don't, I think the biggest advice is actually just don't pressure. You're under no deadline. Take your time, sweetie. I feel like, you know, there's this idea that you have to come out and you owe it to the world to figure out your gender as fast as you can. And if you don't, you're not courageous. And I'm like, fuck that. Like, take all the time in the world you need. Come out as slowly or as quickly as you want to. Do whatever feels right for you.
What advice do you have for parents who might have children who are questioning their gender?
You just got to let your kid lead. You know, like, you can't, trying to steer your kid's gender, it never works. It backfires half the time, and it doesn't help your kid's mental health or emotional development. Like, if your kid wants something or wants to do something, or and it doesn't feel like something that's appropriate for their gender or whatever, like, that's not, if you try and police that, if you try and tell them that they can't do that, all you're doing, like, I mean, all you're doing is hurting your child. You're not protecting them.
Is there anything else you would like to say to everyone listening?
Just that, you know, you should go out and fuck with your gender today. Just try something new.
I like that.
Try something new every single goddamn day.
Jacob, thank you so much for being here.
Of course.
We finally made it happen here in Los Angeles.
We did it. She did it. We did it.
Did you know the best place to view the project is through the website, theythemproject.org? It's the only place you can see all the photos and videos and easily share the project to help it be seen and make a difference. In addition to the website, They Them Project is everywhere. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes and Google Play. Remember that the project grows and informs only when it is shared by people like you. Go to theythemproject.org and share what you see and hear.